everyone. We have a special interview for you today. This is a mega interview with the folks behind bringing Gunn's latest asymmetrical horror game, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, to life. At the pre-launch party, I got the chance to talk to Ronnie Hobbs, the creative director for Gunn, Damian Maffei, the voice of Johnny himself, one of the members of the Slaughter family, and the horror icon, Kane Hodder. Make sure you listen to the very end where Kane even asks Ronnie his own questions about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre game. So plug in and get ready for a good one.
I'm Ronnie Hobbs. I'm the creative director on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre game.
I'm Damian Maffei. I'm the voice of Johnny.
So my first question is for both of you. Why Texas Chainsaw? What attracted you to the role of Johnny, and what, you know, inspired bringing this game to life?
You can go first.
Ronnie came up to me and said, would you like to do the voice, any voice, in Texas Chainsaw Massacre? And I was like, am I on one of these prank shows? You know, it's horror and video games. Come on. Do I pay you? So, that's pretty much all I needed.
That's all it took.
Yeah. So,
and Cracker Barrel.
Mine's going to be a little longer. I've told this probably before, but... Hey, Rob. I've told this story before, but... The first time I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I was probably 9 years old. So, way too early to be watching that film.
Yeah.
But the day... I remember everything about where I was at, like, the day and what I was wearing and all my friends. We were in this little basement that had gravel. Like, it was not a place you would be watching a horror film when you're a kid. Yeah. We rented a VCR and stole someone's TV from our family and ran down there and watched it. And ever since that day, it's just been a film that just stuck with me. Like Friday the 13th and Halloween and Nightmare on Elm Street, all those horror films growing up. They're part of our childhood. And being in the video game industry, of course, we already made Friday the 13th a game. So next on my personal bucket list was obviously the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Not only just because I love it, but because... it also allowed us to kind of push the genre forward. Friday the 13th was one killer. This is three killers at a time. And of course, there's only a few franchises that will actually let you have multiple killers. Like, obviously, Halloween doesn't. Nightmare on Elm Street doesn't. But the Texas Chainsaw has the family. They have this dysfunctional comedic act between them where the cook's yelling to people. And, you know, it's an awesome environment in a twisted kind of black comedy kind of way. So it matched perfectly with our gameplay and then what we wanted to do within the genre. So.
And I think my follow-up question for that is, like you said, like, there are multiple killers. So there's a more balanced gameplay element between the killers and between the victims in the game.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know what went into balancing it even more, because it is really easy. Most of the time, like in Friday the 13th, there's a huge arsenal for Jason to have. How did you balance those mechanics?
Yeah, so Friday the 13th, the one thing that... me personally, as like a designer and a creator, is there was a lot of downtime where you felt safe. Because if Jason's not around, you feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of goof off and have fun with your friends, and then it's not until Jason shows up, then you scream and run, and you know, like, oh my God, run, he's here. But there's a lot of moments where you're safe. With our three killers, you're obviously never safe, because you never know where they're at and how they're communicating. And the one thing about having three killers on the map at once is you don't know what they're talking about and if they're setting a trap for you, or if they're purposely leaving you alone to make you think that you're safe,
mm-hmm.
or they'll funnel you in certain directions only to have Leatherface with his chainsaw turned off around the corner waiting for you. So all of our family members have abilities that kind of like play into each other's strengths and weaknesses. So on the surface, 3 versus 4 seems a little unfair.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, we're not talking about Jason, where he can disappear and reappear. Yeah. He's not supernatural. This is a family of humans.
Yeah.
So sick and twisted as they are, they're still humans who can't morph around, and they can't do any supernatural type of movement. So they still have to run and plan and stuff. So that kind of balances out the powerful attacks that they have because they're not superhuman, right?
Yeah.
So the balancing-wise, it just comes down to giving the victims enough ways to get away, too. Our house is full of crawl spaces and gaps to get through, and certain characters like Leatherface can't go through those, and he has to destroy obstacles for the other family members to get to. So really, it's kind of like the real scenario. If you were really in that house with three killers and you were with three of your friends, you would use every advantage you could in real life to try to get away from them. So it's kind of, it was difficult to balance. But
And from the perspective of playing John, Have you played Johnny in the game as well to get into your voice acting for him? Or how did you build the character out vocally?
At the point of recording the dialogue, I had not played as him yet, but I had seen, you know, some sketches and drawings of him, and there was Ronnie, you know, provided a lot of inspiration, kind of influence for him. So there was that. You know, I had a little research and work to do before taking him on.
Yeah, if you didn't know, Johnny, Pretty Boy Johnny, because he's got a nice scar. Family kind of makes fun of him, calling him Pretty Boy.
Yes. Slight.
He's one of the new characters, one of the new members of the family. Him and Sissy, Sunshine, Slaughter. They're two of the new characters we worked with Kim Hiko on to create.
Yeah.
So the first time I spoke to Damien was several years ago. And at that point, we only had mocap done for Johnny, but we didn't have it completed, and we didn't have the whole character model done. But that was when we were writing the script for all the lines. And there was this whole cadence on how serial killers talk. So we studied multiple serial killers. So really, Johnny's half Richard Ramirez, half Ted Bundy, those kind of guys. Even with a southern kind of twang, we found research documents from like 1950s words that were only used in Central Texas.
Yeah.
So we found these just massive amounts of research done by universities about this Louisiana, Texas mix of southern hospitality stuff. And we took that and wrote the script and sent him all that and sent him the look of the character too, so that he could get into it. And then, of course, he said yes, and then he put his own spin on it, of course.
Ronnie saw me speaking at a function. He's like, this is a serial killer.
And I had known him, obviously, from his movies, too, but he doesn't talk a lot in the movies.
And the movies that anyone cared about, I don't really speak too much in. So when he was like, do you want to do the voice in the game? I was like, me?
So it was, we knew he could do it, but we had a very, very few amount of lines to go off of. But, but once we saw him in a convention, I was like, that's all I needed to hear. So
I think one of the things that really stuck with me on the point of characters and new characters is Anna. Like, I am the Hannah,
nice.
Very specifically. So my family has always been in Texas. Texas is in my blood.
Where from?
So we're originally from San Antonio. My grandmother is Kickapoo down in Eagle Pass.
Nice.
And my grandfather was right on the border. His mother was originally from northern Mexico, but his father was from, like, of the border region of Texas.
Awesome.
So Texas, like, I am Texan, so Texas Chainsaw has meant a lot to me over the years.
Yeah.
But seeing Anna's inclusion in the game, it gives a special piece for people like me who are like, we, you know, built what Texas is.
Yeah.
So what went into creating her as a character and why you included her? Because she's resilient. I mean, she's a tank. She takes
She's high damage because, you know, it's her upbringing.
Yeah.
So I have a really great story about how Anna and Maria came to even be. So Anna's sister Maria is the thing that brings the family together. He hunts down Maria.
Yeah.
Maria's this art student, and they're from Vivaldi, and they had to work hard. Their dad's gone. And just like a lot of kids who are first generation from maybe Mexico or anywhere in South America, right? They come here and they're working hard. And I went to the Bandera and Medina and Vivaldi.
Yeah.
I went probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 trips around Texas just visiting hundreds of small towns and is talking to people looking for the perfect home for Anna and Maria, and I couldn't find it. One day after Medina and Bandera, I stumbled upon Uvalde and just felt like home. And this was a year and a half before anything happened there.
Yeah.
So I was talking to these young girls there that were working, like, I think it was a Rexel's drugstore of all places, and their story, I kept hearing the same story about just having to help work and pay their mother and help get, you know, we don't grow up rich, right?
Yeah.
And you have to struggle for everything. That kind of led me to making Anna tough, because I could see it in this girl that I was talking to about how hard she was working, supporting her mom, but her dad wasn't around anymore, and she had a sister that was also working. I was like, okay. And I kept hearing that story repeatedly. So I was like, okay, this is home. So once I found the home for the characters, I noticed that it was, you know, I don't know the percentage of the population of, like, you know, people that came from Mexico or not in those cities, but it's very, very large portion.
I think the majority in the valley is about 70.
Yeah, so, and I didn't know that when I first started traveling around Texas. I'd never been to that specific part.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, it's a rugged but beautiful place full of hardworking people. And that's kind of where Anna got her traits and her abilities from. But it was really important, like, that I wanted Anna Maria in the game because I wanted to represent that culture.
Yeah.
A lot of people, when they think of Texas, they don't think of that.
No,
for whatever
reason. Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't go below Austin, or sometimes you don't see that, right?
Exactly.
Like I said, San Antonio and all the cities close to the border and all close to West Texas. that little bell there. It was just, it was awesome. It was lovely. And that's kind of where Anna and Maria came from. So
it was well received from somebody in that overlooked.
I've heard this
area
multiple times. So that, and even her voice lines, and we did a lot of research on trying to make it authentic. And a lot of that was just me paying attention to what they were saying. And then trying to remember and write these things down and do as much research as we could. Even her clothes, we found antique shops with clothes that were hand embroidered.
Yeah.
From just tons of generational passed downs from grandmothers to mothers. And the shop owner was like, "What do you think? Is this legit?" And they're like, "Yeah, I think so." So we ran everything by anyone we could to get an opinion. And out came Anna and Maria. And the rest of the characters just kind of followed suit. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
On the killer side, now that we have the tech task, we have the demo downstairs. Have you gotten to play as Johnny? And what is your favorite thing about playing as Johnny?
I won't let him. I've been like dragging him away all day. He's been trying, but
I have been harassing people to play as Johnny.
Yeah.
So you got to represent.
He likes the brutal kills.
I do like the brutal kills. I like that arrogance.
Yeah.
That's what was the most fun to do, is that kind of arrogance, which usually gets your villains in trouble.
Yes.
Ultimately. It's their arrogance is their what brings them down. But, that remains to be seen per match. But, that's it. It's his confidence in what he's going to do. Because he's really plays with his food.
Yeah.
That's what's so delicious about doing that kind of art. Mm-hmm. I'm terrible with the victims. During the technical test, I played as the victims. I'm not a stealth around.
Yeah.
He dies quickly. He makes a lot of noise and dies quickly.
Kicking the door with a lightsaber.
That's me. Or
a
pulse rifle.
You're Johnny's favorite victim to play against. Yeah. Like, you're making all the noise.
Right.
Yeah.
So from a perspective of moving from any sort of acting in film, whether it's physicality or, vocally, but moving into the voice-over space, is there any difference between what you bring to your role in a live action versus what you bring to your role now doing voiceover?
That was the first voice acting I had done. I had done an audiobook right before that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, ADR, which is just usually a miserable affair for movies.
Mm-hmm.
But the voice stuff did provide many obstacles. That wasn't I had to adapt to while I was doing it. This is like, I started in theater, and that, you have to project your voice, and then I went to film. It's like, it's too much, you got to tone it down. Mm-hmm. And then you go back to theater, and it's like, we can't hear you. So then I did the voice acting, and that was, I wanted to have that kind of growly thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great line, and Johnny says, is, you're all gurgle, no guts.
Yeah.
Which I love. And I really want to keep that kind of growly thing. But, a lot of the people he's talking to, 50, 100 feet away. And then, so I'm in the recording studio, and, the director is like, you could be louder. I was like, can't you just turn the volume up?
He's like, no.
He's like, you could be louder. So then I'm like, and then my voice is getting like higher and higher. He's like, no, I'm going to keep that. I was like, I don't know how to hold on. So that, like, trying to find that was very difficult.
And I will say, hearing you talk, like, there is an authenticity to the type of the way that we speak in certain regions of the country. And so, I know, following the game on Twitter, I've seen a lot of pictures of, you going to locations to get locations right and to get, different elements of Texas right. But I do want to hear more about getting the language right, because I think there's an assumption of what Texans sound like without understanding that Texas is a large place and it sounds differently.
They do. Each region from Texas is broken up. So North Texas does not sound like South Texas. Middle Texas is kind of a hub of a lot of different styles. And, of course, you have, the Czech towns, Bernie and all those to the left. So that influenced a lot of this general language to begin with, right? And a lot of it's actually mixed with Kentucky and Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So people migrate south and they do things like that. So really, they bring their language with them.
Yeah.
A lot of the lines are from like my grandparents, and I'm from the middle of nowhere, and that's how they spoke. Is nothing made sense, but only to us, right? And there's this certain language, certain words that only mean something if you know what it is. The first time you hear it, you go, what is that? But then you hear it and you understand what it means. And it's very authentic because, you know, I'm sure your grandparents said some things that you have a word that you're like, wait, what's that mean? So if you say it now, no one knows what the hell you're talking about, right? Because it's a very specific thing to your family.
Yeah.
And Kim Hinkle, when he wrote the original script, he, and I can't remember the person's name, a famous guy in Texas that he used, it was a radio broadcaster, that he based the entire dialogue on. And for whatever reason, I can't think of his name now, but I'll find it later.
Yeah.
He was famous. And he had this very weird twang way of speaking. See, Texas has a draw and a twang.
Exactly.
Has both.
Yeah.
So it's not just a draw, and it's this very long kind of way of speaking with words that are backwards. And so we threw all that together. And, of course, each character has their own personality.
Yes.
So Sissy, because she's out, you know, roaming, rebelling against the family, going, hanging out with cults like the Manson family and moving around. She has a unique way of speaking because she's half, if you ever heard a Manson girl talk, they're very kind of aloof and speaking in high level stuff that makes sense but doesn't at the same time. Like, you'll see the light and you're like, what are you talking about, right? So it's that real aloof way of speaking that, and she's picking up things from California and she's bringing it back. And, you know, the hitchhikers, who knows what he's talking about half the time.
Yeah.
But Johnny was a very, I concentrated on Johnny because I had reference, and it was the way serial killers talk to people.
Yeah.
And specifically, if you watch something like Mindhunter,
where they're
talking, because they did a really good job of interviewing these serial killers, right? And some of the ones from Texas and the South, you can just tell the difference. Like, so we studied a lot of stuff like that to get the coldness of Johnny and mix it with this Southern twang drawl, talking to people like they're nothing, like they're pieces of meat, and taunting them. So each character kind of had their own. But they were all based on, there was a University of Texas study that was put out maybe 10 years ago, like 600-page PDF, and it was broke down every word used specifically in the middle of Texas region and the years that they faded away.
That's amazing.
So I tried to stay words that were within the 50s and 60s because the game takes place in 73, but they would have learned these words in 70 and 65 and 60 and 55 when they're born their whole life. So we kept it. We tried to anyway. Of course, we put our own funny stuff in there. And, but it was quite a while of research. We wanted to get it right.
Yeah.
You know, or at least as close to right as you can possibly conceive. Because really no one would know the difference at the end of the day. But we're trying to get the house down to the blueprint every inch. So we're definitely going to go that extra yard on the voices too.
And I will say, like, this is my podcast voice. This is not my real voice. There's a mixture of Spanish and there's a mixture of that Texas twang that you hear.
Yeah.
And my husband's from Abilene out in West Texas, or I guess central to West. And he doesn't think he has an accent, but when you hear him against other pieces, you can hear it. So it is something that I think a good ear and a Texan will completely understand and recognize in those little choices.
I know that one. Right? Yeah. My grandmother used to say that. I know what that means.
So I will say all of this last question is to Leatherface. Bringing him to video games, bringing him to be in the game visually. What pieces were what you had to get right?
Yeah.
And then also, how did you envision a player playing as Leatherface?
Cool. Before I mention Kane, who's playing Leatherface, obviously right behind you.
I'm trying not to fangirl.
So you can interview him too. But
yes.
So obviously, Leatherface is a weird character because he has to be the strongest, but if you make him so awesome, no one wants to play as everyone else.
Exactly.
So you either make him really awesome and then try to bring the family up to speed to catch him, which is tough with the cook because he's slow and stuff. So it's a fine balance between keeping him original to exactly what he could do in the movie and not making him superhuman. Really, that was the key. We want him to cut through. He wasn't.
That's
right?
What made him interesting. That's what made him the scariest of
he's
that
scary within what
era.
You know.
Exactly.
Within our reality. Right. Yeah. If you see him, you know he's there. He's not going to disappear on you, right?
Exactly.
So we needed to make sure he could open up new pathways, like break doors down, saw them down. There's a reason he can turn the chainsaw on and off. It's because we wanted you to be able to play stealthily if you wanted his Leatherface and hide and wait and scare people with it at the last second. The chainsaw will break and overheat and things like that because that's what they do in real life, right? So we really want to just ground him in reality and keep him primitive. but powerful. So that was the kind of the vibe for him. And of course, we want to get every inch of him right, and the masks, and you know, the pretty woman and the old lady costumes are in there, and you know, there's not a lot of reference, by the way. Yeah. So if, you know, Friday the 13th, it was a lot easier actually, because those movies are in the 80s and 90s and 2000s. Yeah. You have Blu-rays, right? Nothing exists. They only show three rooms in the house. So we went there and saw the blueprints, got personal tours. We've been to all the places, but recreating stuff from the 70s is far more difficult than doing something from the 80s and 90s, just because of the time period. But, and that includes Leatherface's clothes and, you know, how they looked on film is not how they really looked in real life, you know. Yeah, so, yeah, and then, of course, it was about bringing Kane into play. Yeah. So, as you know, Kane was Jason Friday 13 for us, and we knew about his work ethic, and we knew that he's a stunt guy, and he, you know, could handle anything we threw at him for the new people, like Scout working on the game.
Yeah.
And we knew he could play Leatherface because he, I'll let him speak, but he, obviously, he knew Gunner and stuff like that, so.
So how was it for you voicing Leatherface?
Well, he didn't do the voice.
Oh, the voice. Oh, no, he didn't do the voice.
No, he just did all the mocap.
All the mocap.
So.
How was it doing the mocap? Oh, my gosh. I love talking to mocap actors. Yeah. Like, it's.
Killed motherfuckers. So it was good. I mean, as you see, Gunner and I were friends from way back.
Yeah.
And when Ronnie and Wes asked me to do the mocap for Leatherface, I was honored because Gunner was a good buddy and the best Leatherface in any of the movies. And I, since I had stunt doubled R.A. Mihailov in Chainsaw 3 as Leatherface, I was kind of used to mimicking someone else's performance. Yeah. With Jason, it's my performance, but with Leatherface, you know, I wanted to try to make it reminiscent of Gunner, because he was, like I said, a good friend and did an amazing job, and, you know, it just... Again, I felt like it was an honor that they asked me. So,
what is it? What's it like to bring Leatherface to another generation? Because this is going to reach people who may not have seen the original film.
Might not even know the character.
Exactly. Yeah, horror has been so large, and these are icons of the genre, but there may be somebody new just picking it up to play and may not know. What's it like to be the base of that introduction?
I mean, you know, to introduce a current audience to the character is huge. I mean, it was the character that started all the other ones.
Yeah.
Let's face it, you know, Freddy, Jason, Michael wouldn't exist without Leatherface.
Yeah.
So, it was so much fun, because my first experience with an autograph show was with Gunner. And, you know, I've said it a million times, but the nicest actors that I've worked with in 45 years of doing stunts.
Yeah. And I think this is a question for both of you, from the dev side and then from, you know, the acting and mocap side, and somebody who's part of that original era of what I really think made horror open to everybody in a way. Like, the slashers brought so many people into the genre that, I mean, it brought my mom into the genre, and then, like, me and her, like, she then taught me through slashers. And what is it like to, on your end, preserve horror history through games? Because that is what I see it as a fan, and then also as somebody who is in the games industry. And then what is it like for you to preserve this memory, both of Gunner and of keeping it alive? Neither one of you can go first.
I mean, for me, it's, you're talking to a fan. I mean, I was a fan, and I still am, right? So I just, you know, right place, right time. You got to be lucky to be good and good to be lucky, right? But, you know, you get your opportunity, and something like Friday 13 comes up, and you're prepared when it arrives, so then you're able to do some cool things with it. And meeting Kane and getting him on board for summer camp, it turned into Friday 13th. You know, and going down that whole whirlwind of Friday 13th and becoming friends with the same people that I waited in line to get his autograph when I was a kid. So, like, I had posters of, like, everyone on my wall. Like, Jason was on my wall, and, you know, you're a kid, and you're in Kentucky, in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Like, and you're like, oh, this is awesome. To be able to, like, be the one to do it, that's cool. That's a cool feeling, especially because all the young kids now are, like, they go back and watch the movies. Now it's a whole new generation like you're talking about. So to be able to have everyone come to this for something else now, like, hey, make a game out of our IP, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Where we get to kind of pick and choose our next games now, and we chose Texas. And to have Kim Hinkle just be the nicest dude ever and allow me to create characters.
Yeah.
His, I mean, like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah. And then just to call him up in the middle of the day and just chat for an hour about the backstories about Anna Marie and if they're going to fit and come down here and take bows of wildflowers and the blue bonnets and Indian paintbrush, which is what Maria was out doing when you fucking grabbed her, you idiot. Right? And just to get the whole backstory and introduce Texas to a whole new generation. And just, it's awesome as a fan, right? But also, it's a great honor just to be able to. I did that. We did that. Like, you know, we made this game. There hasn't been one since like 79 on Atari. So,
wow.
So it's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
And,
So this is the real Texas Chainsaw Massacre video game. The house is in there, all the filming locations. It's all correct as much as we can get it. Like, in, I don't know how many people know this, but, you know, all of our photography trips were done in Texas. We took super high res photos of everything in Texas. So that's what's in the game. It's what the trees, the flowers,
it's
the grass,
Texas.
The dirt, the rocks, the wood.
Yeah.
That's all filmed in Texas. Those are actual. You're walking around Texas when you play our game. The sky, the clouds, everything, the barbed wire. So we took thousands and thousands of photos. And Sumo, our development team, took those assets and populated this awesome world based on, you know, back and forth in our reference. So you're not just walking around the family house. You're walking around the actual world of Texas, which was awesome. Because we didn't get to do that on Friday 13th.
Yeah.
But we made sure to do it on Texas. So yeah, to me, that. There's only one way to do it, and that's what we did. So.
And I love the Friday game. I think it's amazing. I was happy to be part of it. But the fact, what you did with this game, with exactly what you just said, with the other actors that we have here, and it's just so much higher level than the Friday game. And I think that one's great. But, you know, you have to realize that I didn't become notable until I did my first Friday movie, which was 1988 when it came out. And for me to sit next to Gunnar Hansen and think, I'm not on his level. He's well-known and famous, big movie. I felt honored. And he said the same thing. You're the new guy in the Friday movies. I feel honored to sit with you. I was like, come on, man, you're Gunnar Hansen. And it was just such a fun experience doing the game. And, you know, people don't know, what was our first mocap session?
We did 7 mocap sessions.
What was the first one?
Jesus Christ, dude.
2015? 16?
Shit.
I mean, we did 7 mocaps for that game. And we've done 3 or 4 now for Texas.
Yeah.
And, right. And we have a lot more actors now, like you said, you know, that are playing all the different characters and all the family members. So, bigger sessions.
I think it's fun for horror fans to know that, you know, Friday game, just me and stunt people.
Yeah.
Doing the victims. So now we have actors that are known. I just think it makes it more enjoyable for the horror community.
Yeah. You know? Scout running around playing all the victims. We got Sean playing the cook. I mean, the hitchhiker. We have Troy, who's an awesome actor, playing the cook. We got, obviously, Kenneth Leatherface. We got an awesome guy who played Johnny, Dove Mir. And then we got the VO guy, Damien, who's doing that. Which Christina Cleave with Sissy. She's not here.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of actors that help bring these characters to life, as opposed to just stunt people. So. Yeah.
And the last question for you. What's it like to step into this legacy? Especially as a fan. Like.
Right. Well, I mean, when I remember when I sat down to play Friday the 13th, you know, growing up watching, you know, movies, I was a little late getting in there because I heard all, you know, the nerds talking about it. So, I was like, oh, you know, it looks good. I'm going to get in there. I was like, holy shit. Like, you're in the fucking place from Friday the 13th, part 5? What? Like, how is that even possible? Like, what is this? It was surreal, you know. It goes from, you know, the Nintendo version with purple, you know, throwing rocks at him. So that was incredible. You know, this game is. I had already known them from Friday 13th, gone. Mm-hmm. So when I met them, you know, I
was like, yeah, he was like, oh, I love you guys. I'm like, what?
You know what? Like, let me tell you stories. Yeah. About being harassed by five-year-olds at 2 in the morning playing Friday the 13th.
And he's like, dude, I play Friday all the time. I love it. I'm like,
yeah. So,
like, doing his mocap with yeah. his voice.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, Kane breaks down the door, and then the six-year-old's voice comes out. I'm like, well, where are your parents? So, it was, I mean, it was, you know, the company behind it that they were doing this game. It's like, oh, it's like, yes, please. Whatever I need to do, let me in there. But yeah, I love Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And, I have a genuine affection for, you know, the IP. So there's a lot of pressure, though. You know, mm-hmm. as a fan, of, you know, a nerd, and I try to maintain quality work. It doesn't work out so much all the time. But like I knew this was pretty you know, surefire. Win. But I mean, it's just blown by all. It's just something like I had seen the pictures mm-hmm. they had taken out there, and the care and all the specific details. It's like it's really nice to see as a fan, as a video yeah. gamer, you know. And as someone, I mean, that's who you want to work with.
Yeah,
you want people who care about what they're doing. So it's great.
So, well, I won't keep y'all any longer.
You done? All right.
Thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome.